Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Impact Lab podcast. I've got an amazing guest with me today, Mohammed from Saudi Arabia, who's a product leader. Back in my old school world of product management, I'm really excited to get back into that. Mohammed, how are you doing?
Yeah, assalamu alaikum. I'm doing well, alhamdulillah. Can't complain. Thank you for having me on the show. Excited to connect with you and, you know, converse on all things product and Saudi and, you know, all the things that are, you know, happening in this exciting place in the world right now.
Amazing. Thank you. So before we start, we're going to do the reverse Turing test. So before the show started, we talked about my favorite takeaway in Manchester, because you're in Manchester at the minute. Yeah. And what is my favorite takeaway in Manchester?
The one and only Rusham Chippy.
Rusham Chippy.
Local legend.
Institution. Rusham Chippy.
Absolutely.
If you've been to Manchester and not had a Rusham Chippy, then you've not been to Manchester for all intents and purposes. So, Mohammed, for people who don't know you, you're really kind of well-known in the Saudi world, particularly on LinkedIn, but for people who don't know you, why don't you give everyone a bit of a background of your history and what you're doing in your career?
Yeah, sure. So currently I am VP of product at a company called Salasa, who basically focuses on logistics and fulfillment. Really exciting time to be there. They just literally announced their Series B $30 million funding round. So really exciting time to be there. A lot of other great leaders have joined the company. Prior to that, I actually landed in KSA around 3 years ago when I joined Hunger Station. I was working on their various solutions for their restaurant. That was behind my first exposure of the Saudi market was with Hunger Station and building their kind of portfolio of solutions for their vendors and restaurants. That was a really great entrance into the KSA market, joining quite a mature product and tech team by, you know, the local market standards. Also working with a market leader in a very competitive market space. So it was a really great kind of entrance and introduction into Saudi. Then I ended up spending some time in the other end of the spectrum, in the fintech end of the spectrum, a startup end of the spectrum, just because I wanted to see both sides of the spectrum. I've worked for now, you know, a big and national powerhouse and a market leader, and I wanted to really see the other side of the spectrum in case I spend time with startups. And I spent time as a head of product at Doik, and I was leading the product and design team there. That was a really interesting experience. The company eventually got acquired by Tabby, and in my free time I've been very active. I've engaged with around 60 different startups since I've been here in the last 3 years. I've trained hundreds of Saudi PMs. I've also done various kind of consulting and mentoring for various product leaders here in Saudi. So yeah, it's been a very busy 3 years, and very exciting, and a lot more I need to give, and really feel like I'm just really at the start of my journey.
MashaAllah, tabarakAllah. So I always think that people who are really deliberate about their careers, deliberately choosing, if they're at a big corporate, deliberately choosing to go and work at startups, or the opposite way around, just to get the exposure, they've always got it's very rare you see them have anything other than incredibly successful paths. So MashaAllah, you've already been incredibly successful, and more to come, inshallah. So Hunger Station was your first taste of product in Saudi Arabia. Yes. And for those who don't know, Hunger Station is essentially Talabat or Deliveroo or Uber Eats, basically, for the Saudi market. It's actually part of Talabat, isn't it?
It's part of Delivery Hero. Delivery Hero owns Talabat and owns Hunger Station. So it's a sister company for Delivery Hero.
So what was that like when you felt what was the biggest shock when you first started in that role?
That's a really good question. I think what took me a while to get used to was, to be honest, when you come to Saudi, you have to be prepared to unlearn and relearn everything you kind of learned, because the cultural trends are really different. The maturity of markets are really different. So that was one of the kind of big learnings I had, at the time, Hunger Station, their product team was very heavily focused in Dubai. Maybe only had two or three people in the KSA office, and you had it across the product, org. We had designers, we had analysts, we had product managers, and I think around 40 or so were based in Dubai. I began to notice common trends in terms of, and these were all really, really smart people, and some of the best talent in the market, really intelligent people. But I began to see Saudi had certain nuances that Hunger Station at the time, it's a bit of a different story now. Hunger Station are much more locally based. But at the time, there was certain nuances that people really didn't appreciate about building products in Saudi. For example, the concept of how you onboard a merchant. Merchants here, you know, they need support. They don't know how to create good menus, or as you say, restaurant owners, they don't know how to create good menus. They don't know how to build, you know, create images and manage operations. These are all things that are new concepts to them. So you kind of have to build product experience and onboarding experiences with this in mind. You can't just build a fully automated tool, onboard yourself, and call us better salama. It doesn't work like that in this market. If it was back in the UK and the European and American markets, for sure I would support such a solution. We all love automated onboarding, for example. But yeah, we're dealing with clients that really don't know how to create marketing. They don't know how to create content. They don't know how to create well-designed operations. They don't know how to track data about, you know, downtimes and order dropping. So there's a lot of, you have to really kind of take a step back and really relearn how you do product. Because these are core considerations I would never really have as a product manager back in the UK. But yeah, so there's a lot of, you know, localized trends and behaviors. Another kind of example that I quite found quite shocking as well. I don't know if you have you ever seen the Jahiz app in Saudi?
No.
No, so Jahiz, I don't want to get into trouble saying this, but Jahiz is basically another food delivery app based in Saudi that went IPO. And I was shocked when I found out, you know, this company went IPO, because it's the most basic app I've ever seen in my life. It's literally something you find like a high school graduate in the UK put together. Really, really simple app, really basic listing, a really old, outdated UX and UI, and no real kind of filtering or algorithms in there. And it went IPO and it's worth billions. They recently just acquired a Sununu as well in Qatar, and they're expanding. But that was a really interesting point for me, because I was like, this kind of app would never last 2 minutes in Europe, in America, but it's super successful in Saudi. When I did consumer research, I found Saudis love the simplicity of the app. And this really has just challenged my, like, what's going on? I thought, you know, product management was a universal law. I thought I knew everything about product. And then when I learned it, when I came to Saudi, it was a really humbling experience. I was like, okay, I need to take a step back and really be a student again. So those are just a few examples of, you know, how my initial experience in Saudi kind of, you know, what kind of pathway you kind of set me on.
MashaAllah. I think, look, that was one of the main reasons that I wanted to speak to you, actually, because I think that it takes a massive amount of emotional intelligence to be able to recognize, especially someone with so much experience, like to be able to recognize that actually there's just a big world that I don't understand. Exactly. And what you're describing, I feel like people in Saudi Arabia don't understand quite how different they are. And, yep. And the reason I say that is I spent the first 3 months of this year in Saudi Arabia just because we'd started onboarding some new clients. And I'm like, something's a bit different here. I need to go and live the culture for a bit. Sure. So I went with assumptions. One of the main assumptions I had in my mind was, Dubai, Saudi, Qatar, it's just a homogenous sort of market. They're basically all the same. And Saudi Arabia is entirely different. In fact, there is no comparison. Not only is Dubai a bad comparator, it isn't in any way relevant. I'm talking about from a pure marketing perspective. Isn't in any way relevant to Saudi Arabia. It is the most, we have clients in like 18 different countries, and Saudi is the single most unique market to market in. So when you, the post that you posted was about how the future of product management in Saudi Arabia is going to be Saudi Arabian. And I was like, yeah. And the future of all marketing in Saudi Arabia is going to be Saudi Arabian, because you have to have that like cultural background. And so I was really impressed by that. I really felt like, yeah, you got it. Like, and it takes a lot of emotional intelligence to be able to do that. Most people wouldn't do that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, look, I think I had the kind of blessing in terms of, I really invested in my time to get exposure and understand the market from multiple standpoints. You know, I've worked in these big companies, I've worked in startups, I've been in lead positions and senior kind of positions from a product standpoint. I've then, you know, spoken to local PMs and I've engaged with them and I've mentored them. I've also had the kind of luxury to, you know, kind of speak to product leaders, you know, CPOs and founders, and I've engaged with them and given some coaching and guidance. And I've also had the luxury of working with like really senior, talented product managers, but I also seen big fundamental flaws in how they were working as well. You know, people who are ex-Amazon, ex-Google, Delivery Hero, Kareem, really, really talented people. And their approaches would work really effectively in, you know, markets outside of KSA. But I've seen big fundamental flaws when they were dealing with KSA. The way you build a product team in KSA, you have to have localization in place. The way you build a strategy, you need to understand these are early market industries, a lot of them. It was not about a 3.0 strategy, and it's about getting them to 0.5, getting them to 1, and getting that functionally and delivered and getting things to the market. It's a completely different way of thinking. I've always been somebody who's moved a lot. I've traveled a lot. I've always wanted to kind of experience and learn, and I'm always a very reflective person of what works well, what didn't work well. And this is something that I really pride myself on through my career. So, alhamdulillah, this has all really helped me, and I'm really able to kind of build deeper connections with the local market. People are really beginning to appreciate the localized content, the localized view I have. I've seen really expensive product teams put together, superstar product teams with, superstar, backgrounds from all these different countries, but they failed terribly in Saudi. And I've been quite fortunate to see this firsthand. And I think, I've had some good exposure and learnings that have really opened my eyes.
Time for a quick message from this episode's sponsor. On the Impact Lab, we're all about pushing past the noise and driving real transformation. That's why I want to highlight Al Ufuq. Al Ufuq are based in Saudi Arabia and are a leader in enterprise technology solutions, empowering businesses to truly transform. They specialize in cutting-edge cloud solutions, data and AI, cybersecurity, comprehensive digital transformation, and many services beyond. If you're looking to build an impactful, future-ready business in Saudi Arabia, Al Ufuq provides strategic technology and all of the expertise that you need. All you have to do is visit their link, which is in the show notes, click on Contact Us, and they'll get right back to you. All right, back to the show. Fantastic. So let's dive a little bit deeper into what are the kind of nuances of product in Saudi Arabia. So are Saudi products, are they like MVP heavy or are they execution heavy? Is it like get to market quick and just see what works? Or is it, no, let's make a perfectly polished product and get that out to market?
That's a really good question. Look, I probably think it's more MVP heavy. But I think the challenge really you have, and I want to kind of engage with a lot of startups, is this MVP kind of execution mindset is really, really good. It's really healthy. It's the kind of mindset that you need to have. You don't need fanciful 3.0 strategies. The problem I typically see is just a lack of focus. It's trying to, build new verticals, new opportunities, new solutions before you haven't even gone properly MVP. I haven't even taken MVP beyond an MVP, and we're already thinking about things that are 2-3 years in advance. And we ended up getting distracted, and we end up trying to do too many things, and we end up just getting deviating from the mission. And many startups fail for this kind of reason. It's trying to build, having excessive focus on strategy over just a simplistic strategy and executing. That in the vast majority of markets is really how you need to adapt your way of thinking today. When you're dealing with obviously more sophisticated markets like, food delivery, which is quite saturated now, you've got some serious players, Hunger Station, Keita, it's a bit more sophisticated from like a strategic point of view, but the vast majority of markets are very early stage. They're really just testing the waters, and it's really important to get things out in the market, but just also have a really clear, singular focus. One of my favorite examples locally of a Saudi company that I really admire, who had a really clear focus and vision, and they executed ruthlessly, and now they're doing amazing. There's a company called The Chefs. They were actually going to get acquired by Jahez, which was one of the leading food delivery apps in Saudi. For whatever reason, the regulator ended up blocking the deal, and The Chefs were basically left in a space where food delivery was completely saturated. We're never going to win this market. What do we do next? So they completely pivoted to a niche market that nobody else was really dominating or doing much in, which was high-end istiraha or like high-end dining across the bookings across Saudi. And they completely pivoted in this direction, completely focused. They made this a USP. They made this the prime vertical that they want to go into, and they really doubled down in it.
What's that called again, that app?
It's called The Chefs.
The Chefs?
Yeah. So they were left in like a limbo state. This whole Jahez deal fell through. And within a couple of years, they completely pivoted, and now they are flying again in their own niche. They are flying. It's a really viral and hot, a very well respected app, and it's an app that Saudis engage with on a regular basis. and it's got its own place in the market. So this is a story I really admire, because they had a direction, the direction fell through, they're in a market that they were never going to win, they recognized all of this, found their niche, doubled down in it, high-end dining, and they executed ruthlessly, and now they're really doing amazing things in this market. So this is one of like the amazing local examples I found. It's just execution in the MVP phase is great. Obviously now they're beginning to balance this bit with better designs and make sure we don't, like, you know, we have a minimum lovable product, not just a minimal viable product, something that's usable, something that's enjoyable to use, something that I want to continue using, not just pure features, but also just have that single, you know, have a singular thread in terms of what you're trying to do. It sounds simple, but just people like the discipline to do it.
Yeah, I think that minimum lovable product, I agree, is just actually a better, it's a better guiding principle, because you can have an MVP with pen and paper in reality. But what you're trying to do is you're trying to test, does my business actually have legs in the real world? And if you just go with sort of wireframes, you can't really test that. But it sounds like, whilst there are definite differences in Saudi Arabia, some of the pitfalls always exist, because some of the things you're saying there are applicable across the world. You know, having a relentless focus, having a mission, and just being steadfast against that mission, not being distracted. They're things that I experienced in the US, in the UK, and everywhere in the product world. So it sounds like at least the pain points are the same, but maybe the opportunities are a bit different. From a product perspective, how do Saudi consumers behave differently to maybe other countries you've worked in?
So yeah, it's quite unique, some of their patterns and behaviors with things. Like they are really, I'll give you a few different examples. So they really value simplicity, from the sense of if you, for example, you look at Aqar, which is a leading kind of real estate rental app here in Saudi. It's an app that would be very bizarre from like European or American standards in terms of its design. It's an app that goes straight to the map. There is no kind of filtering. There is no kind of sorting. There is no kind of searching involved. You go straight to the map and you find whatever you want, which is a completely different experience to kind of what you're used to. But Saudis love this concept because when you understand Riyadh and you understand it's a quite emerging city and there's a lot of construction going on, even going from 1 mile radius to another mile radius and seeing the spectrum could be a completely different city at times you feel like you're in. So like the pinpoint location of exactly where you're in Riyadh and what facilities are around, is there a park around, is there a bakala, which is, you know, like a news agents around, these things really matter because, you know, it's a very vehicle heavy city. So Saudis love simplicity, and same thing with Jahiz. It goes straight to like the listing, and you don't do any filtering. You go straight to your restaurant and you go ahead and pick whatever you want from there. So they really like apps that are very deliberate, very focused, very simplistic, gives them what they want straight away. They're not a kind of user base, generally speaking, that likes to filter and search and sort and basically customize what they're looking for. So that's kind of one nuance that you have to kind of deal with. They love simplistic applications, generally speaking.
I think that's true in marketing too. Like, that's one of the things that we had to like relearn, because again, you know, going in with this mindset that the GCC is basically homogenous. If you think about clients in Dubai or in Qatar that we have, they love over design. Do you know what I mean? Like over design, and Saudi is entirely different. Like the moment you over design, they're like, that's too much. Like bring it back down like 60%. So even in a design space, it's different.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like when the feedback they used to give me, the local Saudis, about Hunger Station is like, it's too complicated. It's like, why is it complicated? It was just like, and when I open up Jahiz, I see all the restaurants straight away. I don't need to click on any tabs. I don't need to do any searching. And Hunger Station, I have to click on this tab and then the restaurants come. I just click it. I found it really bizarre. But I kept hearing this feedback again and again and again. I was like, okay, these are real users, real customers giving this feedback. And I have to take this on board. And I have to really adapt this kind of my way of thinking. One of my favorite examples of like a really, really, really unique example in Saudi is there's a platform called Haraj, which is just a big listings platform. I don't know if you know like Gumtree in the UK. Yeah. It's a big listings platform. So they were suffering from a lot of fraud. Basically, buyers and sellers speaking to each other, sharing their numbers and contacting each other directly and bypassing basically the platform. So, you know, what we would typically think as product people here from the West, or just general product people, you know, let's build some kind of sophisticated ML solution for anti-fraud and add some anti-fraud rules and so on and so forth. Do you know how Haraj solved this problem? Basically, put up a screen, a pop-up, and ask people to swear by Allah that they will use this platform correctly. Wow. Because you don't, and then fraud disappeared.
That is unbelievable.
It's quite a hilarious example. But once again, if you understand the local population is a religious, still people have religious values, a God-fearing nation, and when they're reminded of that, it influences their behavior. These are some kind of examples that I found locally in terms of the way you deal with that. But it needs to be a focus on simplicity. And the big challenge you have, as a lot of companies have, how do you go from being a simple single thread app to being like a super app that has multiple threads? And there's multiple approaches that you can take from this. You could potentially provide a light version, potentially focus heavily on personalization. So you offer all these different services, but you're really personalizing on a user level. So it's simplistic to that individual user, but you're maybe more complicated in terms of your business offering. It's a challenge that people are trying to figure out in the market. Also a lot of sensitivity in terms of that I really found quite unique about this market. They're highly sensitive in terms of your language and the marketing that you use. You have to, the way you speak to people from Jeddah is really different how you speak to people from Riyadh, and they're really sensitive. If this doesn't sound like a localized Riyadh slang and the localized Riyadh protocol, so to speak, people would disengage with it. They really value that local voice. If you just use generic Egyptian Arabic that's, you know, well spread throughout the Arab world, people will disengage. Even the way you market, if you present marketing in a way where, you know, I don't know if you've got Westerners in your marketing campaigns, if you've got Egyptians, people, once again, they disconnect from these things. It means a lot. Their national identity means a lot for them. Even to the point where we were interviewing merchants recently, and one of them said to us during these interviews that whenever your finance team sends us invoices, we delete it because it's in English. I don't want to read it in English. So the national identity and the Arab culture is really, really important to them. So those are some of the nuances that I found in this market.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I found a little bit strange. I think it's because it's a country in transition, is that on the one hand, it's extraordinarily ethnocentric. They have really high levels of patriotism. And they have a huge affinity for local businesses, more than even like other Western nations, which are extremely nationalistic or ethnocentric. But at the same time, they're very open to bringing knowledge in, like many of the other GCC countries. What I think is a bit different in Saudi Arabia, though, is that they bring in talent like yourself, who are willing and able to engage in the local culture. Because again, these sound like little tiny things, having copy in a Jeddah dialect versus a Riyadh dialect. That sounds like such a minor thing. But that is quite literally the difference between someone engaging and not engaging in a campaign. Exactly. So it is a really unique market from that perspective. But I'm curious though, again from a product perspective, is it like a data heavy market? Do people engage with the data? Do they allow the data to lead their thinking, or is it much more instinctively based?
Yeah, look, it's when you get good product leaders trying to come to the market, they're trying to be like, by default, it's very much gut feel and gut feel and their observations by talking to people and how they connect with others in the network. So it's quite an interesting market in the sense that a lot of these founders, it's a very big city, but it's a very small city in terms of a lot of these founders, they're all interconnected in various ways. They have like mutual gatherings and istirahas, and they all know each other. And they all really, it's like a billionaire's club, and they all meet up for dinners and stuff. And it's a very small market, it's very quite interconnected. So this does have a heavier influence in some of their thinking and some of the direction that they want to go into. So unfortunately, it's emerging and growing in this regard, but it's a very gut feel heavy market. It's not really data-led in terms of their kind of decision-making. Hopefully, in years, you get more kind of experts coming who will, you know, we need you guys for the localization. I'm not the best person to talk to you about localization. I need young, smart Saudis to guide me in these things. And this is something I really value in my product team. My perspective is, and I'll also just help them grow and mature the product understanding. And once you merge those two worlds together, especially, you know, data-driven thinking, this is where I think we can do something amazing collectively.
Let's explore that a bit more, because I think that's like a really interesting part of your journey. So, you know, you're really vocal on LinkedIn about the importance of local talent. So why do you believe in investing? Because you spend a lot of your own time investing in local talent. So what is the underlying belief that drives that?
Yeah, really important. Like, you know, they obviously, what you really need to understand about Saudi is it's a real spectrum or what's going on. As you know, it was a very conservative society, especially Riyadh, and then it became, you know, very open very quickly. And there's people, and what you need to appreciate, there's people on both ends of the spectrum or somewhere in the middle. People who still have their own traditional values, and that's really, really important for them, which is great. And some people are in the middle, and some people who just really want to explore what's out there. So it was really important to understand these things, because there's certain exposures that we had in our lives in the UK that people have never been exposed to in Saudi, and they're really beginning to be exposed to, you know, different industries like gaming, entertainment, you know, like, you know, fine dining is really opening up now, the sport world of sports, and they're still holding, you know, their religious values and their national interests as well. So it's a world that you can't really have full empathy for these people. You haven't lived and breathed in what Saudi was 10 years ago. And you don't really understand, you know, like how, you know, the families and the kind of environment, the culture's changed and the opportunities have changed, and how Mohammed Salman's vision has changed everything. You haven't lived and breathed all these things. And there's people on all ends of the spectrum, but it was quite a... Saudis are also a very misunderstood place, and it's a really, you'll meet the people, some of the most nicest, kindest, and most, you know, hearted people you'll ever come across. They're just... have their own ways of thinking and their own kind of journeys that they've been on their lives. But once you connect with them, honestly, they're like the most beautiful people I've ever met, and the most welcoming and the most kind-hearted people you ever meet. You try to out-host a Saudi, it's impossible. They will always be you. You try to, you know, go for dinner with a Saudi, they're always going to make you feel like a stingy Brit. It's just, yeah, they're wonderful people, really kind-hearted people. But you need to say, you haven't lived and breathed all these things. Saudi has had such a change and such a transformation, and different people feel about this transformation in different ways. And it's created a lot of new kind of segments of behaviors that were never really were manifest before. Like, you know, you've got people into gaming, you've got people into events, you've got people into fine dining, you've got people into sporting. These kind of segments that have emerged didn't really kind of exist. So there's all these kind of things that, you know, you're never going to have full deep appreciation of these things. And why certain people behave in certain ways. Like, one of my favorite examples is there's a really famous local Saudi celebrity called Yazid Arraji. Comes from a really famous family, the Arraji family. And he opened up a coffee shop called Half Million. And they launched a pink mug and people went crazy for it. Like, there was hundreds of people queuing up for a pink mug in a coffee shop. I would never understand why there's so much excitement about these things. So this is why I need people who've been through this change, who've lived through what's happened in Saudi, and understand, you know, how different segments have been created, how different people, the society have basically adapted to these changes, and how they feel about these changes, and where they're at in terms of the maturity of embracing these changes. This is something I would never have a true appreciation of. And if I'm to sell products in the market and build products in the market for these people, this will be really risky to me as a British Britanni doing this. It doesn't make sense for somebody to be leading this. It needs to be led by people that can really engage and build deep relations with the local user base. So that's why I would say it's really critical from that point of view.
So what are the challenges, if you're a young Saudi starting your product career, what are the main challenges that they need to overcome?
Yeah, look, I think I do have a lot of empathy for them from multiple standpoints. Look, one of the challenges you have when it comes to products is a lot of the product thought leaders and a lot of the product content out there is in the English language. So that's one thing. Anyway, they have to, like, you know, get a good level of competency. That the quality of like being spoken English language is really improving amongst young Saudis. I've even observed that in the last 3 years. But then obviously there's learning the English language, but then there's understanding the cultural nuances of the English language. So there's, you know, understanding, to really understand product management, you're missing out on a lot of content and resources that are available because it's not your first language. So this is something that they have to make an investment in time to embrace. The other challenge you have, you know, product management, maybe a bit like marketing, I'm keen to kind of hear your feedback on this. There's just a lot of unnecessary fluff and theory in there, and a lot of, what could I say? It's just really a very fluffy domain it's becoming. And it's really just, you know, a particular thought leader in America has come up with something that becomes cool and trendy. It just makes no sense. It's got no real world application whatsoever. Like a real hot trend, and we've spoken about AI just before the show, like a real hot trend now is the concept of vibe coding, where through some prompting, you can build like, you know, a front end of an app, and it looks really, really cool. It's an amazing innovation. Now people are saying to me, you know, big American thought leaders are saying, yeah, you don't need to, no longer need to write product specs anymore. Just create these, and you don't need to write specs, and you don't need to create PRDs, which are documents there to, you know, align your marketing teams, align your sales leaders, align your founders, and make sure we have data to track what we're trying to build. Make sure we have a shared common understanding of the problem we're trying to fix, the shared common understanding of how we're going to go to market. All of this is irrelevant. Just build a AI-driven prototype. It's like, what?
It's infuriating, and it's exactly the same in my world, in the marketing world. In fact, I just released a course on the impactlab.store, free course for everyone, called The Prompt Monkey Problem, because basically we've got a whole generation of marketers who are just prompt monkeys. They just know how to prompt. They don't actually understand marketing. Yeah. Marketing is really, really simple. You don't need, if you've ever seen Kotler's book on marketing, it's that thick. There is only one principle of marketing. All we do as marketers is change behaviors. Yep. That's it. To do that, we need to understand people through psychology and understand them through data. And we use the combination of those things to change behaviors. It isn't, I think that it was like this, by the way, in the product world. And the last time I was in the product world was 2012 when I was like presenting at Mind the Product. But even then, I don't want to say his name, but we both know him. You got these sort of US Silicon Valley thought leaders who are just coming out with these extraordinarily complex models. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's not that complex. You know, I'm pretty sure it's pretty straightforward.
There's a lot of this. And there's just a lot of, Marty Kagan, I know he's one of the thought leaders, and I have a lot of respect for what he's done in product management. Like, his book inspired. It's like the first book any product manager reads. It's just become popularized here in Saudi over the last 12 to 18 months. And he preaches stuff like, you know, the product is the center of the organization, and sales, operations, and marketing are here to support the product. That's not how it works. Product is there to support the business. So there's a lot of this kind of misinformation and fantasies that exist everywhere. This is another thing that I really, really focus on. I want product to be a very practical, logical, data-driven exercise. Everything we do has to be backed by the strategy, has to have strategic direction. It has to have data backing it so we can manage the impact. It has to have the voice of customer backing it. It has to have clear positioning in terms of, you know, where do we want to position in the market? Do we want to position on features, on customer service, on pricing? Which particular segments do we target? And it's got to be a very logical, rational science behind it all. Not, you know, using these random weird frameworks, not using these gut fields. So I'm really focused on, you know, let's be very localized and let's be super rational and practical about how we do products and make decisions backed by data and make decisions where we can validate things. This is a maturity problem that's going to take a bit of time for, you know, local Saudi population to embrace. But, you know, we really need people coming here who are ready to share their knowledge, ready to basically do a two-way exchange of information. I need to learn from them because I'm not the most knowledgeable person. I haven't lived and breathed all these changes. There's certain things about the Saudi market I'll never understand. And just when I think I've cracked the Saudi market, there's other things that just completely blow me away. Like, I'm sure you know about Leap. which is like there's a VEEP venue is like 70 kilometers outside of Riyadh, and then on the way there, when you're driving, you see families on the side of the road having picnics on the side of the road. It's like, this makes no sense to me. Like, as a Westerner, I'm just like, why are you not going to the park or go to a nice restaurant? But you know, this is the nutritious Saudi families. They like sitting, they like having picnics together, they like meeting each other. And any of these things in Saudi, I have to appreciate, I will never understand. But so there has to be this two-way exchange of information. I think this is what is a real dynamic that's changing in Saudi over the last 12 to 18 months. I think they've begun to realize they've had a history of this kind of over-obsession with, I would say, like Western thought leaders. You know, overpaying consultants from the West who've got X, Y, Z background, and they're really, really smart people, maybe, and they come to Saudi and they sell some really random transformation project and spend millions on this. I think they began to wake up that this really isn't the way forward, because we have our own local market. We understand our market better than anyone. We don't need people to tell us what to do in this market. What we need is people to kind of help and broaden our understandings and help us grow in certain disciplines and help us become the leader, the best version of ourselves and the best kind of leaders. But in terms of the local market, the consumers, how to go to market, we understand this better than anyone. And I think that's the shift that's happening. There's more investment in growing local talent and getting people to invest in helping to grow those local talents and accelerate their growth, rather than seeking, you know, importing knowledge and importing, you know, basically leaders to drive the country. The Saudi future is the Saudis. I think they've finally made that realization, which I'm glad has come.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that the Saudi future is the Saudis. I couldn't like echo that anymore. I think the example that you just used, because I was at Leap as well this year, but I've seen that before, and I saw it maybe 15, 20 years ago when I first came to Saudi, is families, or sometimes it's just a few men, sitting out on the sand with a tent and drinking coffee. And in that small behavior, if you unpack it, I think you get to the core. And again, this is like a working hypothesis, because I'm still learning very much about Saudi culture. But I think you get to the core of what Saudi culture is. And it's around humility and simplicity. And they're the kind of, and if you think about that from a product perspective, and there is an element of privacy that exists in there too, right? So Snapchat is like the perfect example of that, because Snapchat to this day has a 78% active user penetration rate in Saudi Arabia, the highest in the world in terms of penetration.
Wow, okay, I didn't know that. Okay, very interesting.
Yeah, and here's what's interesting, right, is you get agencies, marketing agencies like us, for example, they'll go into a Saudi market, they'll talk about, oh yeah, we've got to use Snapchat because everyone uses Snapchat. And so I always ask, like, okay, why? Why do people use Snapchat? And generally, they can't answer the question, in which case you don't really understand the consumer.
Yeah.
But I did the research on this, and there's two reasons. One is like a leading and one is a lagging reason. So the leading reason is that when Snapchat launched in the US, it was used for kids in school who wanted to not get caught, you know, passing notes and passing photos around. In Saudi Arabia, it was a way for women and men to have separate groups and have their private photos shared only within their own private groups. That was the lagging reason. It basically was accidentally a perfect product market fit.
Just
social media, but they didn't mean it that way, obviously. Then there's that was the lagging reason. The leading reason is that, you know, the Snapchat guys are super smart. They saw Saudi Arabia penetration rate super high, and so they really invested in the Saudi market. And actually, Snapchat in Saudi Arabia is different to most other countries. Actually, when the feature set is totally different, and even the use case. I still have like the behaviors of watching people use products, like just watching them from a side. And the way they use Snapchat is so interesting. They use it almost like a daily vlog, like a vlogging tool, like a daily vlogging tool. It's so interesting how they use it. So anyway, I think those three things, like privacy, humility and simplicity, are like really at the core of what it is to be a Saudi Arabian, to be from that country. And yeah, you see that in those in those little tents where they're drinking the coffee.
Yeah.
Sure. What about product leadership though? Because obviously it's on an upward trajectory in Saudi Arabia in all verticals, but obviously in both of our verticals too. What do you think separates like high performers from average product performers?
Yeah, no, really good question. From a leadership standpoint, one of the things you have to adapt to, which I kind of alluded to, is you have to be more you have to be ready to be more of an executor than purely a strategic leader. So there needs to be a higher weighting towards execution. So you, if you're the kind of product leader that wants to sit at their desk, basically have four or five mid-management in with you, like, you know, group product managers or lead product managers, and get them to do certain tasks and get them to own everything, and you're just kind of sat back and you're trying to build the overall strategy, that's not really the best way to do things in Saudi. What you have to be prepared to do is prepare to, you know, work on, but prepare to do two things, I would say. Prepare to, from a strategic standpoint, is just getting clarity. All these, you know, ideas are coming in, really helps us filter them, really just be the voice of kind of reason and guidance for your product team. That's really, really important, because you will find, you'll find this globally, but I think in Saudi you'll also find a lot of random gut feel ideas that they come out. At least locally, I feel here in the UK and maybe in the States, I think we're a bit more data-driven in nature, whereas Saudi, and it's very much just gut feel, and it can be a lot of unnecessary kind of distractions going on. And you as a product manager, a product leader, have to really filter that and be the one to, before you give it to your product managers, is you know, do some due diligence yourself, kind of validate things, back with data, try to filter as much of this noise as possible. And then the other thing is, when you kind of are kind of building and launching products, you have to be ready and prepared to go down to the lowest levels if required, you know, attend stand-ups sometimes, and sometimes go to individual product managers and sit down with them, give them some coaching, give them some feedback, be prepared to, you know, change working models, be prepared to jump into meetings with stakeholders, and don't be any, be out of your office as much as possible as well. Really talk to people, really sit there with product managers, really see if there's a problem going, despite the level where that problem is happening, is really be ready to take an action. So they really need like people that are kind of filtering a lot of like this gut feel coming from different leadership stakeholders and departments. And then the other thing is really being prepared to kind of get down at any level and execute and coach and guide people and making sure that change kind of happens. I would say one of the other things I really, really value is I really focus on two things when I build a product team, and it's really, really important to me. First thing I'd say, Yanni, and I call it in Arabic, Yanni, batana tasaliha, I need a honest and, you know, honest and ethical group of people working for me. I can't tolerate people who are dishonest, are going to spread politics, especially in Saudi, Yanni, in the sense that it's very family heavy kind of culture and mindset here. It's really, you know, when you come in, it's just like Mohammed Zulfkar, he's the VP of product, he's the head of product, and that's him. It's just like, oh no, he's Abu Musa, he has a son called Musa, and he came from Britannia 3 years ago, and he lives in Cordoba, and he likes coffee, and he loves to drink Karak. They're really, you know, you're really an extension of the company, and they really want to get to know you, and they really value your identity and your personal relationships. And you really have to invest in these things. You really have to have a strong level of people and social IQ. You have to really know everybody, and you should know everybody's kunya in terms of your, he's Abu Ibrahim, he's Abu Ahmed, kunya being any of the name of their children. And, you know, really understanding, you know, people with different things that are going on in people's life, or how was this and how's your family doing and so on and so forth. You know, it becomes an extension of your personal life, gets thrown into work. And those are some of the kind of things you have to just do. But going back to, so I want people who can embrace this kind of culture and build relationships with people. You know, tensions will always be there, but then the mutual respect and that layers are always there to kind of get over these tension and the hurdles. The second thing is, I really value people who are ready to get their hands dirty in execution. And I look for a sweet spot in people in their careers. Smart young people who know the foundations of product. I don't have time to teach people A to Z of product. They know the foundations of product. So they've maybe got 4 to 5 years of experience, and they're really smart, really sharp. They just need coaching, and their tools just need sharpening a bit. But in return, I've got people who are smart and are very enthusiastic and want to learn, want to get their hands dirty. These are the best kind of people in Saudi, honestly, that I found. And they also understand the local market as well. Because with these kind of people, they're going to physically make the change happen. They come into work with optimism and learning and want to make things happen. They also, you know, embrace the kind of environment required for effective collaboration. All I'm there to do is just make them 15-20% better and just give them some coaching, sharpening some of their tools. That's very different to how I would approach building a product team outside of KSA. But those are the elements that I've seen work really well. that I really kind of tried to double down on.
Yeah, I just want to dive into that last point you made there around effective collaboration, right? Because, you know, product management is at the nexus of so many different departments.
Sure.
Like, you know, it's just like you're leading without any authority in all of these different departments. Is that any different in Saudi? And how do you manage that, like, leadership without authority dynamic?
Yeah, once again, yeah, of course, it's the same thing in Saudi. But I think one of the things is that it's really, really critical. Your ability to kind of build relationships with people is super critical. And that's basically going to open doors for you or close doors for you, in honesty. If you're able to build personal relationships with different stakeholders, and you're able to engage with them, you're able to show, you know, your authenticity as a person, you're a kind-hearted person, you're just here to work, and, you know, they can open up to you, and they, you know, you're able to kind of bring them into your personalized world. You know, this is your personalized journey. These are, you know, I'm Abu Ibrahim. I've got a son called Ibrahim, and this is, you know, I'm a big Al Nasser or Al Hilal fan, whatever it may be. And this is, you know, this is a kind of, you know, office banter that happens, and for now, you know, what happened with Al Hilal. So, you know, it's quite a very vibrant office kind of community. And if you're able to embrace this and embrace this warmness with people, and, you know, also things like, you know, be really humble. Like you mentioned, the pain of humility, you know. You know, like, be the kind of person that will sit there and go for lunch with his employees. And, you know, really get to know them and take a break from work and be like, just be a normal human to them. They really value this authenticity as a person. If you're the kind of person that's kind of cold hearted in nature and you're very methodical or very militant and you just want to get things done and you don't really have time to connect, that's not really the best position in Saudi. It's really, you have to be somebody who loves engaging with people, loves hearing people's story, loves to share and take and loves to kind of engage with people and build that deeper relationship with them. You know, joke about football and kids and, you know, whatever, you know, kind of the office banter that's going around and breaking bread with people, praying, you know, it's really like also a warm feeling, regardless of whatever your faith you're about. I mean, just being in the office and, you know, people pray, there's a very religious society. That also just really builds, you know, like bonds and, like brotherhood and with people. So I find there's just a combination of those things that you really have to embrace. You have to be a people first person. Yeah. You have to be somebody who, regardless of you're speaking to, you know, in the offices, you have people that are, you know, making, you know, there to kind of do maintenance and make coffee and so on and so forth. The way you deal with him, the way you deal with the CEO, and the way you deal with other people, you're the same authentic person. You don't have an ego. You're here to be humble. You're here to learn. You're here. You care about people. You ask people about their personal lives before you go into work. Before you get into work conversation, oh, how's Ibrahim doing? Oh, did you see Al Nasser last night? You know, come on, what are you guys doing? People really value these things. And then, you know, we've had a heated meeting because sales wants one thing, product wants another thing, product are not ready to and want to go in a different direction. We then laugh it off and then we could then go to pray and then we go share some food together. And it is that kind of culture and mindset in the office that is really, really critical to build, you know, like a, you know, strong culture of collaboration and mutual alignment, so to speak.
I think that was the biggest cultural shift that I really struggled to get used to when I first moved to Sudan. Because I think that what you're describing there is true across the Arab world.
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of the workplaces. And I really struggled with that. I've spent my entire career in the UK, in the US, in Europe, and in Australia. And, like, you know, that's wasting time. That's not like focusing on, in my mindset, that's just,
exactly.
Oh, this is just
exactly.
Nonsense. This is just like wasting time, you know, water cooler talk nonsense. But actually, it's absolutely fundamental to building trust and building, sure, like, those personal relationships. And actually, what it does is it negates office politics. It's like really difficult to have office mm-hmm. politics when everyone kind of feels like one family and everyone is aligned on a mission. You know, at first I used to think it was totally superfluous, total waste of time.
Yeah.
And over the years, I realized that it's actually foundational. Because when you build, you know, in the UK, you've got these culture consultants, and they're saying, like, build a family and build an environment where everyone, and the way they do that is by putting in table tennis tables and foosball.
Yeah.
Whereas in Arab companies, what you tend to find is that that exists by default. And the net benefit is a pretty relentless focus on the mission without the politics.
For sure.
Which is what they want to achieve in the UK and the US with these consultants, but it happens as a natural consequence of being in an Arab country, at least in my experience. Mohammed, I've taken so much of your time, and I've just looked at the clock, and time's flown by. I kind of feel like we could do a three-hour session here, but I don't want to keep you too long. I want to ask you one last question, though.
Sure.
So what do you think is the most underrated skill a product manager can have?
Okay, really, really, a really good question. I think the most underrated skill a product manager can have is just being very practical and logical, honestly. It's just being practical in nature, in the sense that I have no attachment to any one way of doing things. I have no attachment to any one framework, any one kind of solution, any, whether it's localized or is a more kind of global kind of focus, any particular framework. It's more, you know, adapting to whatever scenario comes my way and adapting in the most appropriate way based upon the time, resource, and the criticality of whatever challenge I have in my place. And I think that's the number one skill, in all honesty. What really kills product management in Saudi in particular, but also globally, is just all the fluff. I'm going to spend 3 weeks or spend a month doing all this user research, user discovery, and then you've got, you know, the founder, poor founder, who's got all these investors screaming at him and all these customers screaming at him, and you'll want to spend, you know, a month doing 10 interviews and doing this analysis. And actually, I'll come back to you. Let me create this. I kid you not, I've been in like consultancy, I've done a bit of consulting where, you know, they've done prioritization and they've got, you know, government investors, and government is really coming after them, and the product managers are slowing everything down because they're busy prioritizing based on some random formula that gives them priorities. And when the leadership asks, why is this being prioritized? Yeah, because my formula said it's a priority. I was like, guys, come on. I mean, so anyway, we need to have product management in a way where you fine tune it the way you work, and it needs to really be embedded in terms of the speed and the expectation and the needs of the business. That's really important. Product management is not there to be a socially awkward problem child. It's there to be like marketing. It's there to be like sales, to be like operations, and we're there to work in unison with the business needs. And that's the way you need to be. And we adapt, and it's not here to do the perfect science and follow the perfect product process or follow the Americanized Silicon Valley way of doing things. It's there really to just be in tune with what the business needs. And we adapt our processes, we do Pareto's law, we do the 20%. We push back, and sometimes we need timelines, but we push back and, okay, can you give us an extra couple of days to figure this out? It's not like I need a couple of months to do this. So that's what I would say. You know, product management just should be a non-controversial department, be a habitual part of the business, and people see product management, product managers, as nothing different to the way they see operations and sales and marketing and, you know, other departments. And that's what I would love product management to become.
Love that. Yeah. Probably I would agree, actually. The most underrated skill of a product manager is the ability to just get stuff done. Just get stuff done and be logical.
And, you know, understand the urgency of things, understand what people, you know, leadership and the pressures that they're having, and be there to, you know, alleviate this pain and help them grow and be with them on this journey. And it sounds simple, but yeah, it's the number one reason you see product teams. Product management, in all honesty, is like it's the number one problem child when you go to a lot of these companies aiming for unicorn status, and it's the same problems again and again. Product is just really disconnected and are in their own worlds with doing things.
Love it. Thank you so much, Mohammed. I know that our audience is going to get a lot from, I've taken a lot from everything you've had to say, but I know that our audience is going to get a lot from it. There are a lot of people interested, obviously, in the Saudi market. A lot of our audience is in Saudi Arabia. You're also doing an amazing job out there, and I wish you all of luck in the world. Inshallah, you'll continue to make the positive impact that you already have. And so thank you so much for your time.
No, my pleasure. And yeah, really honored to be on this podcast, and I know all the amazing thing you're doing with the Impact Lab. So it's an honor and pleasure to connect, and yeah, let's stay in touch, and I'm sure our paths will cross again soon.
Inshallah. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Before you go, I just want 30 more seconds of your time. Firstly, thank you for taking the time to listen to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please do take a moment to leave us a review. It really helps getting exposure to the podcast for other people. We only do this stuff for you, so please do take a moment to leave a review. If you are interested in our digital marketing agency, Cush Digital, you can go to cush.digital and hit the contact form and we'll get right back to you. The Impact Lab has a free course on the website called The Prompt Monkey Problem. So if you think that you are in that category of people who are using AI too much and not necessarily building foundational skills or foundational knowledge, go to theimpactlab.store and you can sign up for the course entirely free, no catch, no credit card, nothing. Just jump in, do the course, get your certificate, and then start building your own foundational knowledge in marketing. Thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you at the next episode. We'll be right back.